Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's Flames Talk. It is Tuesday, September 3rd. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on this Tuesday from our Groundworks downtown studio, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. We're after Labor Day and on Flames Talk here in Calgary. That means the unofficial start of a new season. Your 2024-25 Flames Talk begins on this Tuesday. We're happy to have you along with us. And because of that, it means back to our regular scheduling, our regular guests. And for another year for the 2024-25 season, our buddy Frank Saravalli is going to be with us on Tuesdays from Daily Faceoff and dailyfaceoff.com. And we've got a lot to get into on this Tuesday as we get this segment of Flames Talk underway. Frank Saravalli, Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Mr. Saravalli, how are you? It's been a heavy weekend, and that's where we'll kick things off. Just how have you been holding up? You know, we talked on Friday as we did our tribute show to Johnny, and on this Tuesday, most of our focus is going to remain on the tragedy that hit the hockey world on Thursday. Just how have you been holding up after a really heavy, heavy weekend in the hockey and the sports world?
Yeah, it really was. I guess I would say I'm hanging in. I think the entire hockey world is still reeling. There was supposed to be a GM and coaches meeting in Detroit tomorrow. That has since been postponed. I think everyone just kind of understands and is trying to grapple with, you know, what took place Thursday night. Just kind of still doesn't feel real.
It really doesn't. Man, I went down to the memorial that kind of organically sprung up just outside the Scotiabank Saddledome. I walked down there on, I guess it would have been Saturday night. Saturday afternoon, rather. I walked down there and just, you know, kind of somberly stuck around for 20, 25 minutes. And since I've been there on Saturday, it's multiplied like 2-3-fold as people continue to come down, write messages in chalk, write messages in the message book and leave some sort of offering just as a tribute to Johnny and Maddie. And it really still doesn't feel real, even though I've been there, and that was a really heavy, somber, sobering experience. I mean, here we are 4 or 5 days later from this becoming a reality, and it you're right, man, it still doesn't feel like a reality, does it?
No, and that's you and me and fans and everyone else. I mean, put yourself in the role of a family member or his parents or, I mean, just the concept that you could go out for a bike ride with your brother and neither one of you come home. It just doesn't make any sense. The outpouring of support, no surprise for the hockey world, has been amazing. Love to see the tributes and the, just the messages and chalk, and saw some Oiler fans mention. I actually had one send me a DM. Him and his son went yesterday, and they actually wore their Oiler jerseys. Yeah. And they said it was the first time that people had actually been kind of friendly at the Dome wearing Oilers gear. But this transcends teams, rivalries, borders, you name it. Allegiances. This is, I mean, I was trying to put it in perspective and trying to think about the sort of broader sports landscape and, you know, seeing Johnny Gaudreau and Maddie on the big screen at Yankee Stadium or during an NFL preseason game, a moment of silence. The Phillies, Eagles here in Philly, they all, you know, put out some sort of release, and Jalen Hurts, and, you know, there, it's been nonstop. But I'm really like, think about if a 6-time All-Star in another sport in the absolute heart and prime of his career, had died under similar circumstances, like, this would continue, obviously, to be front page headline news, you know, 5 days later. And this is, the NHL just thankfully, for the most part, hasn't dealt with this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting you bring up that DM you got from an Oilers fan, because when I was down there on Saturday, you know, lots of Flames jerseys draped on the steps, and lots of Johnny jerseys, so on and so forth. But a few Oilers things left there. Saw a couple Blue Jackets jerseys, couple of other things. You know, it's actually not exaggerating to say Calgary had a purple Gatorade shortage over the weekend. There's a lot of Gatorade and Skittles left there. It is pretty staggering, and as you say, it's not surprising, yet it is staggering and heartening to see, you know, whether it be Columbus and the outpouring there. There's going to be a candlelight vigil in Columbus, what we're talking about here, the rest of the hockey world, the rest of the sports world. It's not surprising, but it is pretty heartening, isn't it?
It is, and you know, I say all the time that the hockey world, it's like the smallest $6 billion industry going. It feels like everyone knows everyone. And the thing is, everyone looks after each other and takes care of each other. So that part is certainly comforting. And just the calls, text messages, you know, even really kind of the pause of business. I can tell you that the Edmonton Oilers and Leon Draisaitl, they had agreed to almost the entirety of that deal on Thursday, and we're putting the finishing touches on it to announce it on Friday. And obviously, in light of the tragedy, they decided, hey, out of respect for Johnny Gaudreau and his family and everyone else, this is something that's going to wait a few days, yeah. And rightfully so.
Last one on this, and then we can move into the big hockey news of this Tuesday. But it really, for me, it just... it hit home how small the hockey community really is. Like, it's huge. The NHL is a multi-million billion-dollar business, and you know, we're talking about 19,000 fans a night in arenas all over North America, and you know, organizations employ hundreds of people, and yet, when for me, the thing that made it hit home first was just all the people in my life. You know, obviously, Each person in Calgary is affected in their own way by a tragedy like this. And then I just kept thinking about people in my life who are affected and affected that much more deeper and are that much more torn up because they were one step closer to Johnny and to Maddie and the Gaudreau family. And like the list of people that this truly affects, like it goes on and on and on. And it just, I don't know, Frankie, it hit home that as big as the hockey world is, it's still a really small circle, isn't it?
That, and I think for me, it probably even extends a bit further just on a local level. Just having played in all the Philly hockey circles, I can tell you that growing up, there really wasn't anyone to look up to say, hey, that guy made it. And Bobby Ryan is 1 year older than me. He was sort of the first guy that when you went to the rink, people were talking about saying like, hey, I played with him. You know, can you believe this is a guy that made it to the NHL? And that's a common thing across Canada, no matter which province you're in or which local rink you play at, there's some jersey, some name, some photo on a wall because that's a thing. But I don't know if I can quite put this in proper perspective for someone who isn't from there, but that doesn't exist here. Like, that wasn't a thing. There were a few people that had made it that were sons of former Flyers that happened to just stay in the area, but they weren't born here. They might have trained here, but there was no like player that just kind of made it. And so it was Bobby Ryan was the first, but then, you know, 6 years later by birth, it was Johnny Gaudreau. And now when you go to a local rink, there's all these, there's like an entire group of players that either played with or were coached by Johnny Gaudreau's dad, Guy, that, you know, went on to have successful experiences, played junior hockey, played college hockey. Some of them made it to minor pro. And it's just an amazing kind of, you know, small community that's the guy that everyone has talked about for the last 10 years now. Hey, I knew Johnny Gaudreau. I know Johnny Gaudreau. I know the family, like, whatever it might be. And it would also be really commonplace to see them training there, to see Matthew coaching at the rink, to see, you know, you'd have a late night men's league, beer league game. They'd be on the other sheet, and then, like, they'd stop over and talk to you. Like, that was – it's a much smaller community here, and he was far and away the best product to ever come out of this area. And I'd be kind of shocked if someone were able to take that mantle from him.
We're chatting with Frank Saravalli on this Tuesday Flames Talk. Thanks for being with us as Frank joins us Tuesdays from Daily Faceoff and dailyfaceoff.com. And there's really no other way other than an awkward transition from something tragic like that to the rest of the hockey world, which we will now focus on. And you already talked about it, the Oilers and Leon Draisaitl held off the announcement, which was set to be on Friday, as you said, and now here on Tuesday, an 8-year, $112 million extension for Draisaitl and the Oilers is signed, sealed, and delivered for an NHL record $14 million average annual value. Frankie, from what you know, and I know you know a lot, tell us about the process of getting to Tuesday's announcement.
Well, it's an interesting contract in that $104 million of the $112 is fully guaranteed by signing bonus. He's taking $1 million per year in salary. And so this is a heavy $15.5 million check in some years up front, July 1st. So structure was important, no doubt. I think there was a period of time that the Oilers felt that they could have gotten Draisaitl for a bit of a discount. And when you look at this contract doesn't kick in for another year, so we're talking 2025, 26, and the cap is projected to be $92 million. So if you're looking percentage of cap, it's not a record setter. This is merely just a market adjustment for the cap continuing to increase. Draisaitl will be at 15.2%. McDavid, when he signed his $12.5 million AAV a while ago now, that was at 15.6% of the cap. So it's an adjustment. It's a new sort of high water mark in terms of that number. I think the Oilers were hoping they could get him in the mid 13.6 range, maybe top McKinnon and move along. So the back and forth, they talked about different structures. They talked about deferred salary, which is something that I wrote about over the weekend. But in the end, it ends up being a mostly standard deal that sort of raises the bar for AAVs in the NHL.
Well, And you talked about the cap going up, Frankie, and to put it in perspective, and I know there's going to be a lot of, holy, $14 million, and we'll get to Connor's extension in a second, but, like, yes, Leon just reset the bar, and nobody's surprised by that, and you know, for whatever reason, 14 always seemed like the ballpark number to me, so when I saw that number today, I was like, oh, yeah, 14, that's kind of where I thought it might be, and that's not to pat myself on the back.
I said it's just not, and not tooting my horn, but this, you could see this coming from a million miles away. I said last October or November, and then, you know, changed the number to impact the season that Evan Bouchard had, 80-plus point year. I said $40 million moving forward for Draisaitl at 14, McDavid at 16, and Bouchard at 10. That's one of the three done. Now let's see where the other ones come in.
And honestly, the reason why I felt 14 was because you were throwing that number around, and I was like, yeah, that just 14 makes sense. And so you see that number, you're like, yeah, okay, well, that's kind of where it probably should be or where it felt like it was going to slide in. And to put it in perspective, as the cap keeps going up, the Oilers are only adding $5.5 million to their cap, which I think maybe makes it a little bit easier to understand that, yes, does this impact their cap and is having the type of money they're going to have allotted to three players a lot? Absolutely, no questions asked. But on this contract alone, it's a $5.5 million add-on to the cap from where he was before. You can kind of wrap your head around that a little easier if it's starting to become a whole, how are they going to fit 14 in, right?
Well, you also have to factor that he was pretty well underpaid for this huge last chunk of the deal. The last 6 years of the deal, he was probably really underpaid. I mean, there's a guy that won a Hart Trophy, had how many 100-point seasons? I think no one will bat an eye if I said he's the second best player in the world. There's a lot of nights where he has the ability to stake claim to that argument. So to go from 8.5 to 14, it's not a crazy, crazy jump.
Yeah. Okay. Now that we've seen Leon's deal and you just threw out 16 and have been throwing out 16 for quite a while, Connor is a little less than a year away from being eligible to sign his next extension. 16, is that what we should be ballparking for number 97?
I think that's fair. I mean, I think there's a lot of people out there today and probably some Flames fans that root for the Oilers' demise, saying there's no way both those guys are going to re-sign in Edmonton. And that narrative, that notion took a huge hit today. I mean, Draisaitl re-signing there, I mean, to me, I've never viewed either one as leaving, but if there was going to be one of them that might have wanted to spread his wings, my money would have been on 29, not 97. And now that he's locked in, I think this all but guarantees that McDavid stays in Edmonton for the foreseeable future.
Yep. Lots of links when it comes to the Oilers and different defensemen, whether it be via trade or whether it be PTO, whatever the case may be. You hearing anything kind of new or anything that might be moving towards kind of close to being done? Anything that you're hearing on that front?
PTO-wise, I believe it's not done quite yet, but I believe the Calgary Flames are bringing in Tyson Barrie. So that is a shred of news if you didn't have that already. But he was on the list with the Edmonton Oilers. And
that is a shred of news, by the way.
I think they are, you know, he must have gotten word that he wasn't going to get a deal in Edmonton. I don't know how that all worked. But I know the Oilers were talking to Justin Schultz. I don't think he is interested in this time at going down the PTO route, would like a contract, understandably so. And I also don't know where that leaves everyone else, but you're starting to see some PTOs pop up. Steven Lorenz in Toronto today, Stanley Cup champion, and then there's Tyson Barrie.
Yeah. What do you make of a potential Flames and Barrie fit?
I think it's going to be really important. I think first off, Tyson Barrie has lots of game left. I think there's a sour taste left from Nashville and how last year kind of unfolded for him. I think he's doubled down again in terms of his training to make sure that he arrives with the best case scenario possible. I think the Flames have some open competition and ability to earn a roster spot. And I think just from a pure leadership perspective, provided that he comes in and makes the team, this is a guy that is instantaneously going to be part of Calgary's leadership core. Every team he's gone to, he's been really well liked. And he's someone that I could see in short order wearing a letter on his sweater for the Calgary Flames. I mean, he's someone that just people gravitate to. I can't explain it any other way than that. And for a team that is in transition, for a team that has some leaders but could use more, I think there's a lot of reasons to like that.
Pretty decent bet that that PTO turns into, I mean, obviously the player has to live up to his end of the bargain, so on and so forth, but pretty decent bet that that turns into a contract between the two sides?
I would think so.
Yeah. I don't mind that. I you know, going back earlier in the summer, we talked about some different targets for PTOs, and Tyson Barrie was one of those ones that really made a lot of sense for me because, as you said, you go back to his time in Edmonton. You go back to when he was part of a trade that, you know, brought a huge piece back to Edmonton and Matthias Ekholm. Like, go back to his time in Colorado. And as you said, like, people absolutely rave about this guy inside the room. And that's one of the things the Flames are really trying to build here.
Well, yeah, culture is a huge buzzword. What does that mean? Your culture is who your people are. It's who Craig Conroy is and Ryan Huska and the rest of the group that they choose to surround themselves with. But it's the leadership part is great, and I'm certainly not going to discount that at all because I think it's hugely important. But you have to have game too. You can't just be a good guy. And I think the reminder here is that Tyson Barrie's one season removed from double-digit goals and 55 points. From the back end.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's certainly nothing to sneeze at. And I mean, to be honest, I've been surprised that he's lingered on the market all summer long as teams decided to give out contracts to guys, multi-year deals, and for multi-millions of dollars to guys that just play a totally different, tougher, bigger, meaner style that I think people have kind of slept on and the trend has gone the other direction toward you need guys that can move the puck and you need guys that can make plays, and that's him.
So a nice little shred of news to wrap up our conversation, Frankie. Just quickly.
Not official yet, by the way, but I think things are trending in that direction is what I would call it.
Okay. That is good to know, but okay. I like that. What's on, anything else on the radar with training camps looming?
Not really. I think there's still a few, certainly other PTO things to sort out. There's still some RFAs. I'm looking to Detroit. I'm looking to the two guys that they have, Raymond and Sider. I'm looking to the Boston Bruins and Jeremy Swayman, who joined their informal workouts today, interestingly enough, without a contract. Jeremy Swayman is represented by Louis Gross, who also represented Johnny Gaudreau. So I'm sure there's a lot of things, on the go there that, certainly makes a tough situation even tougher to think business. But there's still a lot to play out between now and 2 weeks from now when players report for medicals.
Great stuff, Frankie. Really appreciate the time, as always. It's good to have you back for another season. Hey, pal, be well. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Hang in there. See you guys.
Yep, you too, pal. That's Frank Saravalli from Daily Faceoff and dailyfaceoff.com joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. The best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call them at 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.